Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Ever Over After by J.A. Derwent. Narrated by Neva Navarre and Jeremy York. Prologue. Marlowe, move-in day, Northern Louisiana University. I hitch my 2-ton duffel bag over my shoulder and look up, up, up at my new dorm. 12 stories tall. Holy shit, that's a lot of estrogen in one building. Makes Boozman Hall at Orleans Academy look like child's play. The thought causes an unwelcome pang straight to the gut. Darling, if there isn't an elevator in that high-rise, I may have to pay one of those muscled-up fellas over there to get your trunk to the 10th floor, my dad says, his gaze shifting back and forth from the building to me. I grunt and grab the other end of the trunk, damn well determined no one is talking to any muscled-up anybodies. Hell no. I hear Dad's sigh of relief once we get inside and hear the pinging of an elevator. The sentiment quickly dies at the sight of the monstrous line of other students, parents, and trunks waiting impatiently in front of the 2, yes, 2, elevators. I slap his shoulder and sigh. Resigned. Buck up, old man. Looks like it's gonna be one of those days. Shit.
Language,
he mutters with not an ounce of conviction.
Damn it.
White cinder block walls, 2 bed frames bolted to the floor with blue plastic mattresses sitting on top, looking shiny and unwelcoming. Formica covered desks with chips along the edges, and weathered wooden chairs shoved against them. 1 2-by-2 window, glass foggy and too high to peer out of without standing on top of aforementioned desks. 1 lonely-looking sink, with exposed pipes and a matchbox-sized mirror on top of it. My new home, at least for this semester. I rotate in a slow circle, taking it all in, not that there's much to see. Dad left a few hours ago amidst an onslaught of "Are you sure?" and "You can always start next semester." I followed them with my own barrage of "This is what I want," and "I'll be just fine." But the truth is, now I'm not so sure. As my gaze flits from the empty walls, the cloudy window and mirror, and the carvings on the side of the desk, "I heart penises," "Never forget," with a rudimentary drawing of a brontosaurus alongside it, and my personal favorite, "Here I sit, broken-hearted. I masturbated, then I farted." Robert Frost, eat your heart out. Profound words from the ghosts of students past. What would I leave behind for the next person? Not a single thought bubbles to the surface. Because, just like this room, I'm empty. I shut my eyes and fight back the sorrow that clings to every part of me. I blow out a breath and try to exhale the hatred crushing my lungs at the mere thought of Remy fucking Rodriguez. How could I have been so naive and stupid? Looking back, I see the signs, the not-so-subtle hints of what was to come, like graffiti painted on the billboard of my ridiculous life. And I fight back the tears always ready to fall at the thought of ever. Ever. No matter how hard I try, my heart won't let him go. I'll never forget the way his lips had brushed against mine, or the way he'd made me feel like I was his solace. So I try to remember the blank look on his face, his hazy, unfocused eyes, as he snorted powder up his nose. The ultimate finger to me. To Easton. To everything that had mattered in his life. The truth of it is, I'm too broken to help him now. I can't help him any more than I can help myself. I can't be his solace anymore.
Hello?
A chipper voice calls from the other side of the door. The knock causes the door to creak open a crack, and a girl with braided hair and a tentative smile peeks in.
Are you Mara's new roommate?
I nod, plastering on my most welcoming smile. It feels forced, but it's the best I can manage.
That's me.
She motions behind her.
I'm your across-the-hall neighbor. I take it Mara hasn't gotten here yet? She usually keeps her lips, among other things, locked to her boyfriend until the very last minute. He still lives in her hometown.
Ah, so that's where she is, I say with a chuckle. I slide my fists into my jean pockets and shrug. An uncomfortable silence settles between us as she looks around the room. My head is a jumble of cobwebs and dust bunnies, and mustering up the energy for polite conversation is not something I'm capable of right now.
I like what you've done with the place.
She laughs, and her gaze settles on the unopened trunk at the edge of my bed. Yeah, I'm going for the sterile, generic motif. Kind of depressing, huh? I frown and fall back onto the plastic mattress. The springs creak beneath me, sounding more like they'll break than bounce back.
I don't know. I guess it's all in how you look at it,
she says, and plops down beside me.
Maybe it doesn't have to be depressing. Maybe it can be more of a blank slate.
My heart squeezes at her words. Yes, a blank slate. I love the sound of that. I open the chute in my brain and empty out the hate, the loss, the sorrow. I'm not foolish enough to think it's gone forever. But right now, in this moment, I'm not Lo, the girl who lost it all. I'm whoever the hell I want to be. I extend a hand, and a more genuine smile tugs at my mouth. I'm Marlo. She ignores my hand, throwing an arm around my shoulder and squeezing tightly.
I'm Sarah. Glad to meet you.
Chapter 1. Marlo, present day. Her blood-curdling scream filters through the electronic sliding doors, and my adrenaline takes over, legs pumping as I pull on my gloves. I glance behind me to make sure Sarah is steady in tow, and she smirks as the delivery kit bounces over her shoulder with every stride.
Bet you're wishing you ran with me in the mornings now.
She chuckles, not even sounding the least bit winded.
Fuck off,
I mumble under my heaving breath, loud enough for just her to hear. It only makes her laugh louder. We're the first to make it to the front entrance of the hospital, but the show looks well on the road, with a woman laying down in the front seat of a car, clutching her overly pregnant belly, her legs splayed out on the concrete of the parking lot. Her husband is occupied with skipping and hopping while pulling out every hair on his head and hollering, "Help!" at the top of his screechy lungs. Seriously, the dude could audition for choir boy back in the Middle Ages.
Oh, God. I can't take it,
she shrieks, clutching the car seat and dashboard, backtracking into the car like she's just come face to face with Freddy Krueger.
No worries, lady. You'd scare the shit out of Freddy right about now.
Sarah lowers the delivery kit off her shoulder, and we get to work. I take a quick peek under the woman's nightgown and give Sarah a quick nod, a silent message that no way in hell is this woman making it upstairs to labor and delivery to have this baby. I'll consider us lucky if a doctor even makes it to the parking lot in time.
What's her name?
I ask the frazzled husband, and he looks at me like I have a unicorn horn sprouting out of my forehead.
Huh?
Name. What's your wife's name? I match his frantic tone with calm and ease, hoping it'll rub off on him.
Allie!
I nod once and wave him over.
Thanks.
Now, get over here. You're about to meet your baby for the first time. Pretty cool, right? It's obvious he thinks I'm a lunatic, but since I'm the lunatic who knows what she's doing, he complies. Sarah unpacks our equipment as I approach the patient during a break in her contractions. We've been working as a team for as long as I can remember, even back when we were nursing students, wide-eyed and scared shitless. Labor and delivery is a team sport, and it helps to work well with the other players. I love it when our shifts coincide. We know our parts and play them seamlessly. She likes everything in order. I crave control. It works. I hear the faint sound of metal on metal, Sarah arranging the instruments we'll need sooner rather than later. Kelly, Kelly, scissors, clamp. I block her out and drop down on my haunches, getting eye to eye with the mom-to-be. My lips are stretched into a thin line, and my eyes are somber, because I know what happens next. Now I need to make sure she does. Allie, look at me, I say, as her eyes dart everywhere but to me. I grab her hand and squeeze. Allie, we're not making it upstairs. This is happening. She shakes her head frantically and scooches away from me.
I want the epidural.
Allie, stop. Look at me. When her eyes meet mine, I give her a sympathetic smile. We don't have time. Her eyes go wild and desperate, darting to Sarah for some alternate plan. Sarah gives a small shake of her head, and, thankfully, Allie sobers. She evens out and turns back to me. Good girl. Now, I need you to listen to what I'm telling you, I say, and I see the pain creeping into Allie's eyes. Terror slides over her expression, about to hit its hellish peak. Another contraction.
Oh, God!
Allie retreats, but I grab her by the knees before she gets very far. I move in close, eye to eye. Allie, I know you don't want to hear it, but you've got to listen to me. Do as I say, and you won't blow out your bottom, okay? It sucks to scare the shit out of her, but sometimes you've got to hit him where it hurts. Goal-directed fear has its place.
Listen to her, Allie Bear!
Her husband cries, brought back into the game by the warning of a vagina explosion. Boys and their toys. What a douche.
I can't! I'm sorry!
She shakes her head frantically back and forth, and I grip her hand and nod, telling her she can do this. She will do this. A blood-curdling scream erupts from the depths of her belly and flies through her parted lips. And then she makes the face. All L&D nurses know the face. She's pushing.
I'm sorry!
She screams. And then she douses me in a warm, gooey, downright disgusting mess of amniotic fluid. Tip to fucking toe.
Oh, shit!
Her husband cries. Great aim, Sarah mutters. Nice and steady, I say calmly to Allie as the baby's head crowns. Keep that push nice and steady, Allie. You're doing great. Over the next two contractions, Allie pushes like a champ, and I maneuver the baby out and to her chest, where Sarah takes over cutting, clamping, and stimulating the little one. I think about what an honor it is to work with such strong women. Allie just went through hell and came out the other side in pure heaven. I think about how lucky I am to be part of this miracle. I think about how proud it makes me to use what I know to help other women in what is equally terrifying and magical. What I do not think about is the amniotic fluid and particulate matter that's pooling in the bottom of my shoes. What I do not think about is the undershirt that's saturated and sticking to my stomach, or my bra that weighs 10 pounds and needs to be wrung the hell out. God, I can't stop thinking about it. Footsteps ring out in the entrance behind us, and I turn to see Dr. Howard slinging on his lab coat, hair disheveled and eyes bleary. I see a team of people filtering in behind him. Nursery, ER, patient care tech with a stretcher. Allie's smiling eyes leave mine and move to Dr. Howard, who's busy rubbing his eyes and putting on his glasses. Once she has his attention, she glares.
Made your job easy, didn't I?
Sarah barks out a laugh, and I laugh too.
Allie has bite, and I like it.
Sarah gives me an I got this nod, and I turn to Allie. Congratulations, Allie. She's absolutely beautiful, I say. She takes one look at me and her face falls, realizing the not-so-pleasant state of my clothes. I shake my head and wave her off. Don't give it a second thought, not a single one. I'm going to get cleaned up while Sarah stays with you and your little one, yeah? She nods and shoots me a watery smile. Before I can stand, she grabs me by the hand and squeezes.
Thank you. Just thank you.
And that's why I do this. I turn away and clap Dr. Howard on the back before walking away.
The placenta's all yours, Doc. Nice delivery, Marlowe. Just remember to fake left next time, he says with a laugh.
I grab my purse out of my locker and pull at the OR scrubs I'd borrowed for the ride home. My demolished pair are in a biohazard bag at my feet. Those bad boys will need an extra hot washing, or four, before they touch my body again. Or maybe I should just cut my losses and toss them in the trash. I fetch my phone out of the side pocket and notice a text waiting for me. Mike.
Morning quickie before we crash.
I sigh, exhaustion settling in my bones. I'm always beat after my night shifts, but I can usually muster it up for a tussle in the sheets with Mike, my no-strings-attached, sexy-times guy. We have not one thing in common, other than we're both in the medical field and both the graveyard shift. But he doesn't need to say much to suit my purposes. And he doesn't ask many questions, so I've kept him around longer than most. Me.
No can do. I ended the shift with a shower.
Mike.
Eh?
Me. An amniotic fluid shower. Mike.
Fuck.
Me.
Nope, that's the point. No fuck. Next time. Cool?
Mike.
Ready when you are.
And that's the great thing about Mike. He's always ready. Or not. He'd tried to insert himself into my life in the beginning, but once I'd laid out the rules, he was cool about it. So for the last year, we've had great sex with no questions and no commitment. We don't mix friends, and we don't spend the night. All I ask is that we keep it monogamous. Because diseases. The nurse in me demands it.
Breakfast?
Sarah asks as she breezes into the break room to collect her things. I'm wearing postpartum mesh panties and stolen OR scrubs, anxiously awaiting a Brillo pad scrub down when I get home. What do you think?
Fine,
she whines, slamming her locker shut. I'll grab donuts for Adam and the kids before crashing at my house. I'll bring a few over to you when I get home. Can you take time away from your scrub down to answer the door when I bring them?
For melt-in-my-mouth sugary O's of goodness? I think I can muster it up. And look at you, sleeping at your own house. I'm surprised you haven't shut off the utilities.
Sarah rolls her eyes and shoves my shoulder. Then she shrugs, because she knows it's true. Sarah is a soon-to-be expiring lease away from cohabitation with her fiancé, Adam, and his kids, Lily and Gage. He's a tatted, hella sexy super dad, so I get the attraction. Not to mention, his kids are freaking adorable. Twins. Seriously, the whole lot are a Gap ad waiting to happen. Yeah, I totally get the attraction. The marriage part? Not so much. But Sarah and I are hardwired differently, so I keep my mouth shut and hope her happily ever after isn't just a happy for now. Dreamers don't take kindly to realists pissing in their Cheerios. I don't want Adam to have to shush the kids all day while I sleep. That's not fair to any of them. But I need my snuggles before I head to my house. Her face gets all gooey and sweet, making me the teeniest bit nauseous, but I smile all the same.
Her dream, not mine.
It doesn't escape my attention that she says my house and not home. I'd be lying if I said I didn't miss Sarah lately. We've been next-door neighbors for years, friends since college. I see her at work all the time, but it's not the same as crossing the yard and hanging out with my friend. I'm being a whiny bitch, but sometimes it feels like she's moving on without me.
Don't forget I like sprinkles,
I call out as we head into the parking lot and go our separate ways. It's not quite 7 in the morning, and the city of Providence is still sleepy, making my drive home quick and painless. Some mornings I find myself parked in my driveway with no recollection of how I got there. It scares the hell out of me, so I make it a point to chug some Diet Dr. Pepper before hitting the road. Every night nurse has a poison of choice, and DDP is mine. We take our caffeine seriously. I trudge up my walkway and tackle each porch step like the mountain it is. Almost there. I slide the key into the lock before I notice it. A folded piece of paper wedged into the frame of the door, just above the knob. It's probably a flyer of some sort. I pull it out of the door, noticing the weight of the paper feels less like Zippy's car wash and more like a wedding invitation. So I flip it open. And all the blood drains from my face. My heart pounds in my ears like a thrumming drumbeat. An iron fist clenches my chest, wringing the breath from my lungs mercilessly. Years. Years. Of looking in the rearview mirror, and I come face to face with my past in a head-on collision. My scarred and blackened heart will certainly be one of the casualties. My fingers tremble uncontrollably as I jam the key into the lock and jiggle. "Come on, come on, come on!" I hiss, releasing a pent-up breath when the knob finally gives way. Once I stumble across the threshold, I throw my full weight into shoving the door closed and engaging the deadbolt. A rush of memories flits through my mind like a high-speed highlight reel of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the irreparable. "Where are you, Ev?" I stop, his name lodging in my throat like a bowling ball. "God, I can't breathe. I can't breathe. I can't fucking breathe." My eyes refocus on the note clutched in my hand. "Your lips, luscious red, my balls achingly blue. Have you any idea how long I've searched for you?" I bend back the window blinds and scan the road, looking for him, knowing he must be here. The street and driveways look peaceful and undisturbed, but I don't trust my own eyes. In the span of a minute, 60 seconds. All my trust and confidence takes a nosedive into the back seat, then crawls into the trunk. Wouldn't I feel him if he were here? I'm not sure anymore. It's been so long. It's been no time at all. Haven't I always known it would come to this? Haven't I? Chapter 2. Marlowe. I don't answer the door when Sarah comes knocking. She'll see right through me, and I have no intention of explaining. I've made it 8 long years keeping this from her, from nearly everyone. I see no reason to become Chatty Cathy now. I don't go to sleep, either. After a long shower filled with scrubbing and denial, I'm too wired up to even contemplate a nap. Thank God I don't work again tonight. I'd be useless. I opt for baking as I stare at the note sitting on my counter like it's laced with anthrax. And isn't it? The damn thing should have had "Enter at your own risk. We'll blow up your life as you know it," written on the front. Fucking ever. Months ago, I'd waited for the other shoe to drop. Alex had mentioned in passing that her caterer had asked after me, said he'd known me a long time ago, and it had put me on edge. I had never asked her about it further, opting for blatant denial instead of ripping open the fragile scars of the past. It wouldn't take much to turn it into a gaping wound. So I'd turned a blind eye and had hoped for the best. It's been months. I had thought it had been a fluke, just one of those weird coincidences of life. Sure, Ever had been quite the cook years ago, in another life, but he's probably a junior partner at his father's law firm by now. So I'd let it go. And now I'm furiously whipping up cotton candy on my stove as the perfect adornment to my pink and blue swirled cupcakes with buttercream frosting. Nothing tastes as dreamy as sponge sugar and icing. I'll drop these to Sarah and the kids as an apology for ignoring her this morning. I'm composed enough now to face her, and that's exactly what I'll do to get the answers I need. Ever may have the upper hand for now, but I have every intention of getting control of this situation. Control is what I do best. He'll never know what hit him.
It's so melty, Lily says,
cake crumbs spewing out of her mouth as she looks at me in awe. As far as kids are concerned, the baker walks on water. I swipe a finger through the icing and tap her button nose. She jumps, making her corkscrew curls bounce, and lets out an ear-piercing giggle. Gage never even looks up as he mows down his second cupcake. He may be tiny, but he can still devour the damn thing in 3 bites. His dad would be proud.
Humph!
Sarah tosses a plate with a sad-looking donut on top of it, shriveled up with sprinkles flaking off the chocolate.
Here's your donut, Marlowe, since you couldn't be bothered to answer when I stopped by. Eat up!
Ew, that's nasty!
Gage mumbles through his mouthful of cake, scrunching up his nose and shaking his head. I smile sweetly and push the plate toward the center of the table. I appreciate the sentiment, but I'm not hungry. Thanks, though. Sarah purses her lips as she wipes Lily and Gage's mouths.
Likely story.
A smile tugs at Sarah's lips, and she breaks out into laughter when I start flicking petrified sprinkles at her face.
Stop, you wench! I'm gonna have to pick that up.
I toss the donut into the trash as she cleans mouths, hands, and hair. Lily and Gage wriggle and pull, desperate to escape Sarah and her wet wipes. Can't say I blame them. I prop a hip on the counter as they dash out of the kitchen and feign nonchalance.
So, how's the wedding planning going?
Sarah swings her disbelieving eyes back to me.
Who are you, and what the hell have you done with my friend?
Shut up.
I'm serious.
Whatever.
I blow out a breath and shrug. The question isn't that out of character.
I've been neck deep in baby's breath and tulle for months, and the only thing you've ever said about this wedding is, I'm a size 6, no Easter-colored dresses, and make sure it's low-cut enough to show off the girls.
She tips her eyes to the ceiling and points her finger in the air.
Wait, there was that time you said, I know a stripper who makes Channing Tatum look like Elaine from Seinfeld. Let me know when to call him.
She nods with pursed lips.
Yep, that's it. That's the extent of your wedding planning help.
Okay. So maybe I haven't been the best friend lately.
I'm turning over a new leaf,
I say, giving her a toothy grin.
Is that so?
She narrows her eyes and crosses her arms.
Little does she know, I'm a master at the art of disguise.
Sarah's way too wholesome and naive for the likes of me.
I've missed you. I've missed spending time with you.
I say, and it comes out genuine, mostly because it is. I do miss her. That's the number one rule of deception. Stick to the truth as much as possible.
Have you found a photographer? A florist? A caterer?
My voice upticks slightly at the mention of the caterer, but Sarah misses it like the novice she is. I smile and nod through her disbelief at the price of photographers and her struggle in deciding between peonies and classic roses. I swipe at my ears a time or two because I swear to Christ they're bleeding.
Mm-hmm,
I say, agreeing with whatever crap she just said about cream and white wedding dresses. If you ask me, finding a virgin bride in this day and age is the equivalent of discovering an alien in the Circle K. So wear white, cream, or hell, purple, if that's your jam.
I'm gonna be the flower girl.
Lily stands on her tiptoes, reaching for the cupcake Sarah placed on top of the counter.
And I'm giving rah-rah away,
Gage says from the doorway, chest puffed up and head high. Sarah's dad passed away when she was a child, so she gave Gage the prestigious honor of walking her down the aisle. I can't think of anything more fitting. These kids, Even my black heart pumps a little faster when they're around. It's only temporary, mind you. The coal sets back in.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?